God, help us today to become closer connected to you, or to feel closer connected to you. This idea of you being a friend just doesn't sound like it can be real. It sounds like it's fantasy land. I pray, though, that we would taste it today. We would taste closeness with you, and we would come close to you and enjoy at least the potential of friendship with you. And so help my words help us to come to that place. We pray these things in your name. Amen. Well, Jesus says, you're my friends if I do what you command. Oh gosh, isn't that just kind of friends we all want, right? Man, that kind of sounds like, that sounds totally counterintuitive. That sounds like religion, which is what we've not been about in the midst of this series. I mean, isn't that religion, isn't that what it says? Do this, don't do that, all this stuff. And then yet Jesus says, you're my friends if you do what I command. But really, that's what all of us do. Actually, it's very blunt. Jesus gives it very bluntly. Friendship mantra 101. And that is, don't be a friend with somebody who doesn't honor you. We all do that. We just don't say it to people. We don't say, you're my friend if I do what you command. But really, that's our expectation. You're my friend, and I command you not to gossip about me. And when they gossip, friendship breaks. You're my friend, and I command you not to steal from me. But they steal from us, friendship breaks, or at least it needs to be healed. See, all of us have these things that go with all of our friendships. Where we understand there's certain expectations that must be in place, or else there's not a friendship. And Jesus is saying, I want to be friends with you, but our interests and our actions have got to be aligned. And I'm not even going to ask you to do anything that I don't have an expectation myself, because as I'm connected with my Heavenly Father, I do everything that He commands me. And so what Jesus invites us to do is to be in friendship with Him, to be in relationship with Him, to actually remain or abide. Sometimes it's translated to dwell with. Actually, that word remain is mentioned 11 times in John chapter 15. 11 times. Remain, 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 remain. Jesus is saying, stay in friendship, stay close. And as we finish off this life series, it might be that some of us are realizing the reason why we haven't felt life the way we always wanted to is because we've been remaining in the wrong things. All of us remain in something. We're all a friend or primary relator to something. We get to the end of life and we realize that something just didn't bring us life. I was thinking about this last week. I saw a little thing on CNN's homepage about people who are Star Wars fans. I want to ask you to identify yourself if that's what you are. I like Star Wars, just not enough to actually stand in line weeks ahead to get Star Wars Episode 3. Star Wars Episode 3 is coming out, and here we have Star Wars fans in L.A. are standing outside the theater where Star Wars Episode 2 previewed, and so they're camping out to get it, and people come to them and say, I'm sorry, it's not previewing at this theater, it's at the other theater, and they say, oh, no, 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 it's not going to happen, it's not going to happen. They wouldn't believe it. They said, no, you're trying to pull a fast one on us, we're going to stay right here planted in this line. So there's still people standing in line to get tickets to see a movie that they can't get tickets for in the line that they're in. Even though someone said, get out of the line. Why is that? Because they are remaining in line. They're remaining there thinking that life, in the form of Star Wars Episode 3 tickets, is awaiting on the other end of it. And before we poke too much fun at those people, we all do that. All of us are in that same place. We stand in the wrong lines. We stand in line thinking that as soon as I get to the end of the line, I'm going to have fulfillment. We stand in line for a certain possession or a certain person, or a certain attribute or whatever. And we get to the end of the line and we still need to get into another line because that line hasn't brought us life. We're still hurting. We still have this, or if we're not hurting, we got the thing, but we still feel like we don't have life. Like there's something that's missing. Jesus, he was interacting with his 12 closest friends, his very last supper, which was called the Last Supper. Oh, good. Quick crowd tonight. Very good. Quick crowd. Called the Last Supper. He was such a great teacher because he would take what was in the environment and use it to drive a point home. And so they're having wine at the Last Supper there, and he probably looks in this cup and he starts thinking about the process from grapeage to wineage. You know, he starts thinking about that thing, And he starts illustrating for them a place that everybody is in relationship to him, or at least one is place. I'm going to tell you, there's three types of people in here. Three, all of us are in one of these categories. So you always hate when you get categorized, but you are. All of us are in one of these categories right now. There are some of us that don't feel any sense of life because there really isn't any life in us. There isn't. Jesus talks about how when you look at where these grapes come from, there's some vines that don't bear any fruit. And he says, I am the vine. I am the vine and I want you attached to me. I want you attached to me. I want you to be in friendship. I want you attached to me because I'm the vine and you need to be attached to me. And God is the gardener who is the one who handles us and who takes care of producing the fruit. And so he says there are some who have no fruit. They have no life. They have nothing of spiritual significance popping up in their life. There's no vitality. There's no sweetness in their life that pleases God. There's nothing what's happening in their life that God says, wow, you're doing that because you love me and you love people. And it's just natural for you to sense life. And so what it says is God, actually, some Bible says cut off, but similar to sometimes where there's a word that's not, you fully can't get the meaning to it. It's actually the idea of God takes up. It's the same word that's used when Jesus takes up his cross. God takes up. And there's some of us who are down here. And if you notice, there's something wrong with this. What's wrong with this? There's no fruit on it. There's no fruit. Because if you're in a vineyard, everything that's down low and in the dirt, there is no fruit. Sunlight's not getting to it. Dirt's getting caked on it. And this is the way many of us are. We're in this place where there's no dirt. And so what God has to do is he has to take us up and string us up. You know what this is? This is a form of discipline. Some of us in here are being disciplined. We're being disciplined. You're going, hey, you know what? I thought this series was supposed to be about life. Man, 7 weeks. Guess what? I ain't got any life. I don't feel any different than I did 7 weeks ago. You know one of the reasons might be? One of the reasons might be there is something in your life that God is disciplining you for that you think that you can have life without any change, and that can't happen. Because what happens is when we are in the dirt, when there is nothing of spiritual vitality in us, God's got to take his hands. He's got to rub off the dirt. Sometimes the spanking on us, getting that off, strings us up. And some of us have completely unrealistic expectations that we are going to experience life when we are being disciplined because we are unwilling to get out of the dirt. We're unwilling to get out of the thing that has kept us in bondage. We are remaining in our petty preoccupations. We're remaining in lines that go nowhere. We are remaining in the same things that everybody else is doing and everybody else is getting ahead in, but we don't have life because we are remaining in the wrong thing. And God will discipline you. He will come when we have seasons where we're not bearing fruit and pleasing him and being a blessing to him and to others. Well, he will discipline us. And some of us in here, we don't feel life because you're being disciplined. And you're mad at God. Or you're mad at the Bible isn't what it says, but you should be mad at yourself because you're refusing to deal with things that need to change in your life because nothing is going to pop out until you get out of the dirt and stop remaining in the things that you shouldn't be remaining in. Some of us are in that camp of being disciplined. Others of us are in the camp where our life is, you know, sort of like this. We're getting pruned. Some of us are getting pruned. Now, pruning is different than discipline. When I moved into our most recent house, it was an older house, and so there's a lot of older, bigger trees all over the place. And, you know, I wanted to trim these things back because they didn't look very good. Some of the branches were ugly. They were dead. Plus, I wanted to trim them back because I didn't want all that leafage and my gutterage. You know, I didn't want that in there. So I hired somebody to come out and trim them because they're way up high. And of course, what do I want to do? I want to take the absolute minimum number of branches possible, because what's concerning to me is that it looks right. These are maple trees or oak trees, whatever. Maple, oak trees. It's concerned me that they look right. So I want to take off the minimum amount of branches that have to go to have it look right and not get in the way of, you know, my gutters and all that kind of stuff. I remember a guy, and I know nothing about trees, nothing about being an arborist or anything like that. But I remember a guy who had some other trees, and you've seen people's trees like this. You go by their house, and you're like, what in the world? Why did you just butch your trees? You ever see that? You go, and they're like chopped up. It's like sticks coming out of the ground. I said this one guy. I said, dude, what are you doing? You're killing your tree. What are you? No, I'm not killing it. I'm pruning it. See, his trees were fruit trees. And the point of fruit trees is not to look good. The point of fruit trees is to bear fruit. And every arborist or every wine master, every arborist, every vineyard guy knows that the point is not leafiness. There's something chemically that happens inside of the plant when it is pruned that it produces more fruit. Strange thing is, you could take a look at a vine and you could see all kinds of leaves all around it, but that says nothing about how healthy the bush is or how much fruit is coming up in the midst of it. And God will do these things with you where you're not doing anything wrong. You're not sinning. You're not in the dirt. You're not being disciplined. That's what discipline is. So just kind of lifting you up and spanking on you. But these places where for us to bear more fruit, he's got to take things away. In fact, there's often these seasons where you go back to where God is pruning. Every healthy plant is always getting pruned because the pruning leads to more fruit. It leads to more life. Some of us in here are getting pruned. We're getting pruned, not disciplined. It might feel like discipline, but no, what's happening is God's cutting things away from us and preparing us for greater harvest. Everything in my life I can think of that has been of significance has come when I lost something or God took something away from me. Libby and I came here to help start the church here in Cincinnati. We got pruned of Pittsburgh, got pruned of a good football team. We got pruned of lifelong friends, got pruned of family. So we got pruned. That stuff got pruned out, you know, in order to get here. I'm finding as my kids, they get more and more mature, I'm getting pruned because the more mature they get, the more irrelevant I become. And I get pruned out. I get snipped. And I'm like, oh, no. Why don't you say, no, it's part of the healthy thing. As they start growing and blossoming, my role ends up getting pruned out. Some of the things that used to be part of my role ends up getting pruned out. And we'll run away from great life-giving opportunities because we think that we shouldn't have to get pruned. Some of us have this desire to start a business or to start something else that's going to be a blessing to people, or maybe go into some sort of nonprofit organization or maybe into ministry, but we don't. Do you know why? We don't want the season of pruning. We want the fruit of how great that feels and the contribution it can make to society, but we're not willing to have our salary pruned down. We're not willing to have a greater level of doubt and fear and security. We're not willing to have our security pruned down. Every time you have a great friend, a great friendship you want to have, what happens? Your current friendships, someone's got to get pruned off or at least pruned down. Every great thing that God does in our life requires pruning. And this is so counterintuitive to us because we are a foliage society. We like foliage. We like leafage. But leafage is not lifeage. Leaf is not life. The life is the fruit. But yet we go after the perfect foliage, the perfect car, the perfect date, the perfect body, the perfect all these things. But there's no life. There's no fruit. There's no excess fruitiness. God is a foiler of your foliage. He will foil your foliage. You know, and you think, oh no, what's wrong? I don't want... Your foliage is in the dirt, or your foliage has got to be snipped off because I'm not really about you looking nice and green. I'm about you producing fruit. And when you sense the fruit, when you feel it, you will be very thankful for this. Here, what's a good example of pruning? American Idol. It's very good. How many of us been watching American Idol. Come on, let's not be shameful. I have. I'm shocked. I have. I've been watching. And how many of us have actually called in and voted for somebody? Now, you are the ones that really got problems, you know. Watching it is okay. But, you know, if you call in, man, that's, you know, you got way too much excess time on your hands. No, I'm seriously, American Idol, I don't know why, I've been totally sucked in. And here's the way it goes, if you haven't seen it. Someone sings their heart out, they do what they need to do, and then you got Randy's the first guy who goes, and Randy's kind of like middle of the road guy. He's like, gives him some upsides, some downsides, tells him some stuff, you know, he's kind of middle of the road guy. And then there's Paula Abdul, she's right in the middle, she's second, and she's like, oh, it's the greatest thing ever, no matter who it was or what they did. Oh, it's the greatest thing, I want to have your baby, it was so good. But I can't have your baby, because I already told the last contestant, the one before him, everybody to her is beautiful, everyone is just awesome, it's just beautiful. It's just, she's just like breathing on people's foliage, going, your foliage, she's just breathing on the foliage. And then Simon comes. Now Simon's got some problems in terms of communicating things in the appropriate manner. You know, he gets a straight stuff. Like, you know, I haven't heard anybody tonight who I haven't heard a karaoke before. He'll say something like that, or he'll say you were this or you were that. And you know what's interesting? You watch the contestants, like Randy, they're kind of like, oh, I don't know what's going on. And Paul, they're like, and they always feel good, and they know it. And then when Simon comes about for him to talk, they're tense because they know what Simon says counts. They know that what he says has value. You might not say it the right way, but they know from what he said about other people, they've gone, I agree with what you just said about that person. I agree. So they know, though his words may be difficult, they're pruning. They're pruning words. They're snipping words. They're pruning down things. They're giving direction that's helpful. They're pruning words. And then when he comes up and looks at this sense of fruit or performances, oh, they know it's real. And there are some of us that God is pruning us. He's snipping things out of our life. He's foiling our foliage because leafage isn't lifeage, and he wants us to have life and be connected to him in relationship with him in the vine. And then there's some of us who have fruit. Some of us are bearing fruit. There is stuff popping up in our lives that is just fun, great, great, great things. Here's my Bible. Take a look at verse 3 of John chapter 15. Verse 4 of John chapter 15. It says this, remain in me as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I'm the vine, you're the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. Jesus says, you can't bear fruit when you're detached from me. You can have foliage while you're attached. Like these things, they were cut down a few weeks ago. I don't know how they're still living, okay? They're staying green for a little longer. These were weeds that were on our property, basically. They're staying green for a little longer. But you know, if there was fruit attached to that, that would have been gone a long time ago. When something is severed, it cannot bear fruit. And Jesus is saying, you can have a lot of foliage apart from me, but juicy stuff that satisfies God and is eternally satisfying, you cannot have if you don't remain in me. Look at all the remains that are in there. Remain, remain, remain. There's all kinds of remains that are important. Then on down to verse 8, he says, this is to my Father's glory that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. He wants us to bear fruit and much fruit. He wants there to be an excess. An excess, more stuff popping that's of value in our life, more stuff that's just kind of popping all over the place. And some of us feel that right now. You feel like, I don't know what I did, but I'm sensing something right now. Part of what you're sensing maybe, some pruning. You know, I'll tell you right now, there's some of us who did not get into a life group. I'm not trying to give you guilt. I'm just trying to give you some reality. You've been here for 7 weeks and never gotten a life group. Here's what I know. I know that your level of spiritual growth the last 7 weeks has not been the same as those who've gotten a life group. It just hasn't. And you had all kinds of reasons why you couldn't find time. You had all kinds of reasons why this. Fact of the matter is you were unwilling to prune your schedule to be in a place where more fruit would be popping out of your life. You know, I've got our group on Friday night. Man, we had to prune some things out to have a Friday night group. I tell you what, had to prune some things out. All of us here in life groups, we know we had to prune some things out, but we're sensing things, feeling things, doing things, being people who we would not have been had that been pruned out. And when that happens, God is like, man, that's what I want. I'm not about pruning you. I'm not about disciplining you. That's not my goal. My goal is not, okay, how do I strip their leaves off? My goal is not, okay, how do I, you know, brush their own? My goal is, man, I want them lush. I want fruit. And you want it. I want them to be juicy fruit, like lush, popping, inner satisfaction, contentment, abundance. Folks, that's what I want. God says, I will do anything to get you to have more. You know, God wants you to have more. We think God's a miser God. He's not. He wants us to have more. Just more of things that we don't value maybe as much as God does. I must admit that I'm kind of bummed that I didn't value the Pope when he was living as much as I do now. Have you been watching any stuff on the Pope? I never had anything against the Pope. I just didn't realize the fruit of his life until you start reading about him after he's dead, you know? Read the stuff in Time magazine, you watch PBS, you realize, man, what an awesome guy who had just fruit popping out all over his life. You know, he looked religious, and he was religious. Man, that was not his story. His story was life popping out from underneath those papal garments. Think about death. Start to have a lot of, you know, ideas about how life ought to operate. Think about your life, like 1 year. If you found out that you had 1 year to live, 1 year to live, what would you do differently? 1 year to live. Turn to your partner or your friend or someone. Tell them one thing you do different. You had 1 year. Well, if you find out today you had 1 year to live, turn around. Say something right now. You can do this. A little mini life group for 5 seconds. What would you do? All right. Okay, now probably all of us have a picture of what we would do if we had only 1 year to live. We were told definitively we have 1 year to live. You know, I'm a little more dressed up than normal because I did a memorial service today. Did a memorial service today for a 33-year-old. Found out had liver cancer and told you got a very short amount of time to live and didn't live much longer. And we know that our life is coming to expiration. We get very intentional about the kind of life that we lead. We get very intentional about saying, do I have the kind of fruit that I need to have? Now, take the picture of what you would have if you had a year to live, what the change you'd make, and then take a snapshot of your life right now. The difference is all the pruning God's going to do in your life. Let me say it again. The picture of how you would live if you had a year to live in the snapshot of your life right now is all the pruning that God's going to have to do to your life or all the disciplining God's going to have to do to your life before you bear fruit. Now, don't get me wrong. If I found out I only had a year to live, I probably wouldn't pay parking tickets or I'd probably double park all over the place. I mean, there's certain little things that I would do differently. Maybe not. Maybe I'd want to be more moral if I had a year to live. I don't know. There's certain things you do differently. Maybe I wouldn't be as anal on my taxes or something like that because I wouldn't be as concerned about getting audited. There's certain things that you would do. Maybe God's going to discipline me just saying that. You know, now my taxes are totally cool. Although that's a good point. You know, some of us got 6 days. 6 days. Give me a little discipline based on those numbers you put down. I don't know. Why did I go there? What was I saying? See, now you're getting me all off my mojo. What was I saying? Year! Oh, that's a year. Okay, but whatever that year was, there's no reason you and I can't live that life today. No reason. See, we're standing in the wrong lines today. We're standing in the wrong place. We are not attached because ultimately, if you had a year to live or a day to live, it shouldn't be any different because you should want to be attached to the vine. You'd want to be attached to Jesus, which is being a friend. And some of us are being friends. We're being friends. That's another realm. Or that's the primary realm is where we get invited into a friendship. Here's what it says in verse 13. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You're my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you servants, because servants do not know their master's business. Instead, I've called you friends, For everything that I learned from my Father, I've made known to you. He says, look, I'm so committed to you and your fruitfulness that I'm willing to be pruned myself. I am going to be cut off from this planet for a time. I'm going to be pruned. I'm going to lay down my life for my friends. And you're my friends if you do what I command. But don't get me mistaken, Jesus says here. I'm not calling you slaves. I'm not calling you servants. Not that kind of command. The kind of command that invites you into the vine where I am. What makes somebody a slave or a servant versus a friend? Jesus tells us. You have an understanding of why. Why? Jesus says, I'm not going to give you like mindless orders. I'm going to let you know, invite you in on the business plan of my Father. I'm going to let you know what is happening. And so you can be a part of that. I one of the things I've been trying to grow in as a manager, sometimes I'll give people tasks to do and they'll come back to me afterwards and they'll say, wow, I had no idea that after those things were done, the really cool outcome would happen. So they were kind of bothered in the midst of some of the tasks they had to do. I'm realizing I've got to give people a better overall picture of these are the things that we're doing. And if we do these things, it's going to result in this, because that's what Jesus is saying. Part of my business is I let you know this is what I'm doing in the world, and you are my friend because this is what I am already doing. I'm inviting you not to be my subservient peon, but I'm inviting you to be a part of what I am already doing in this world. Who's our friends? Two things our friends are. Our friends are, number one, our friends are those who are interested in the same things we're interested in. You ever notice this? You don't have any friendships with people who aren't interested in the same things you're interested in. In fact, our friendships will migrate from person to person based on what our interests are in a specific season. I could look out a pack of my life, and when I'm really interested in athletics, I had a certain kind of friend. When I was really interested in marijuana, I had a certain kind of friend. When I was really interested in, big ideas and dreams, I have certain kinds of friends. When I'm really interested in, okay, I got to figure out how to do this marriage thing, I got a certain kind of friends. And then maybe some of us, do they still do Dungeons and Dragons? Is that still around? Yeah, so is it. What happened? When you're interested in Dungeons and Dragons, you're doing Dungeons and Dragons. When you're interested in PlayStation 2, you got people who are PlayStation 2. So it's your interest. And we naturally migrate to the place where our interests are. But it's not a club where we just share ideas. Our greatest friendships are always those who we do things with, right? It's those who we play athletics with. This, unfortunately, it's those who we do partying with. There's a sense of action that binds us together. It is those who we serve with. It is those who we dream with. It's those who, it's always, that's our friend. And Jesus says, that's where it is. I'm not asking you to park your rear end in a seat once a week and hear high ideals about me. And no, I'm inviting you to be attached to my vine. I'm inviting you to be a part of all that I'm doing. And when that happens, there'll be this inner fruitfulness and abundance that you can't even explain unless you felt it. Happens weird times. Like my wife and I are going to a date night a couple weeks ago. We're driving to a date. We're driving through through Hyde Park. And as we drive through Hyde Park, there's a guy pushing a car. We were surprised by two things. One, someone pushing a car. Secondly, the kind of car that was being pushed is not the kind of car that normally drives in Hyde Park. It's pretty broken down. And so we immediately got a picture of something unique's happening here. So I pulled over and said, hey, do you need any help? And apparently the guy who was pushing was a jogger who was just jogging by while a woman and a couple of her kids ran out of gas in the middle of Erie Avenue. So they ran out of gas. Of course, when you do that, when you pull over and you say you're okay, at least for me, most of me is hoping that they say, oh, no, we're fine. I say, okay, good. You're right. Is that right? But, so, I feel good because I stopped, and now I feel good because I get back to the line I was in, right where I was. I get back into my agenda. Says, yeah, they ran out of gas. I think they could use some help. Woman winds down her window. Can we help you, ma'am? She says, hey, I got a gas can in the back. If you could just take it with me, because I can't take my kids to get it filled up, that'd be good. Now, I know about people who have gas cans in their back, because I have a gas can in the back. You got your gas can in the back, it's the back for one or two reasons. One is you're always absent-minded, or two, you're always absent cash. You know, it's one of those two things. I had a sense this was absent cash. So we realized, okay, Jesus is inviting us to be part of his business. Jesus is inviting us to be part of what his Father's business is. He's inviting us to be grafted in, because Jesus is in that car. He's in the midst of those lies. He's in the midst of someone who, you know, could use some help. So we make that decision. As soon as you make that kind of decision, at least it does with me, you start to feel new fruit popping up. Pop, you feel it. You just sense it. And so we grabbed that thing, went down to UDF, filled it up, came back, and like, man, let's stick some money on this cap and just give it. So here you are, ma'am. And I just wanted to kind of didn't want any fanfare. Just of course, I didn't want fanfare. I wouldn't be telling you the story, I guess. But didn't want any fanfare. Just gave him the can, took off, and I tell you the feeling and sensation as we left, wondering what's going on, mine, kid's mind with all that. And there was this. To just stay in our course, stayed in our line, to go to the restaurant to have our normal date, would have been a nice night. But it was not excess. That was excess. God gave us access and opportunity for excess, an opportunity of fruit popping up in us. And this is the way God works. He invites us to be a part of what he's doing. Sat with a friend of mine, pastor of a church in Detroit. About a year ago, I started talking about this thing where they had this like service, this whole series, and they had a team or small groups that went concurrent with it, and the whole church was in it. Sitting there and talking to some of the people, like, man, maybe God's doing something here. God's doing something there. The whole idea where the life group journey was to come from came from what God was doing elsewhere, what the business he was already pulling off. This is what God does. He does things that he invites us to, and he says, I'm calling you out of your dirt. I'm calling you out of the fixation on your foliage, because I have a greater call for you. Call of friendship. Call of foliage. Call of going from foliage to fruitage. Inner satisfaction. Other ideas that have come up this last week I just want to share with you. Interesting, because here's the other thing about this. You know, when God calls you to be his friend, you cannot do it on your own. It's like taking a single strand of straw and trying to move something across the floor. You cannot move anything. But you take a whole bunch of strands and you bundle them together and you get a broom, you can get some movement. You can start moving things. And when you are by yourself, apart from Jesus, apart from other people, you're not going to move much. There's not going to be much fruitfulness. But God calls us to friendship. He calls other people to friendship, to be grafted into the vine, to be a movement of God's business. It happens when someone pushes a car and someone fills up a gas tank. It happens when somebody decides to start a life group and somebody decides to actually attend the life group. It happens when somebody decides to actually enter conflict and speak truth and speak grace. It happens when a designer who's here in Cincinnati, part of our church, moves and goes away up into another part of the country, but still stays attached to what God's doing here and actually gives his artistic skills to help the CityLink Center initiative that our church is behind with some other churches. There's some drawings that he has. This is our idea of, the idea in the city to get churches and parachurch ministries working together to service those in need and actually link friend to friend with them. And these are his renderings. So he's being used by God to build this center that's going to be, it's a part of our crazy campaign. It's going to help change our city. South Africa got these videos, little pictures this last week of what's happening when our broom comes together to build an AIDS hospice mortuary center in South Africa for those who are dying of AIDS. And we've got another slide. Let me show you. You know what you're seeing there right now? That is the largest AIDS hospice in the entire country of South Africa. You understand what I'm saying? The largest AIDS hospice in the entire country of South Africa, comes all the way from across the globe with a group of friends that have been banded together. So much so that they're telling us that, man, we could put another second floor on that, and we could do another, on top of that concrete slab, we could do another 100 beds for people who are dying. So we're considering that. Fun stuff. Here's another one. This is really cool. Our church was part of the relief for the tsunami. We had a person on our board who grew up in Sri Lanka, had some connections. This Point Piedra part in Sri Lanka. And you can see it was a fishing village. Their stuff was decimated. Their means of economy was decimated. There's some people who are in makeshift places. And look what just arrived this last week as a result of our generosity. They're new boats. They're new boats. This is a part of what we did, just as a natural outflowing of God blessing us and us saying, God, we want to be your friends and rebuild that entire city. And their boats have just started to show up now to put their economy back online. And when you see that and when you sense that, why do I share that? I share it with you because this is what we feel. We feel the sense of fruitfulness that sitters or leaves never sense. It's when we engage in what God is doing that there's this sense of life. I was talking with some people this last week about their journey in the midst of the life journey, and I want to invite them up right now. Please welcome Bill and Allie to our stage. Yeah, be careful. There's no railings on that. You know, we have OSHA that's all out here for the new building. You know, they're probably coming in here and say, there should be railings on that. Well, be careful coming
Bill's
up.
Bill's a lawyer.
Bill, you are a lawyer, aren't you? Let's see. Well, tell us, you've been in a life group, correct?
Yeah.
How's that been going?
It's been awesome. Bill and I actually moved out of our house here in Mount Lookout right around the time that the life group series was going to start. So a couple of months ago when people first started talking about it around here, we went home and had a conversation, and we said, maybe we'll just join a friends group or something like that, but there's just no way we could really get into this thing because we're going to be out of the house, having left one and not having our other one ready yet.
So you had to make some real sacrifices to be involved in this journey.
Yeah, and I kind of said to Bill, hey, I don't think we could do it. Just off the cuff, I just don't think this is the right time for us.
And Bill said,
I just didn't agree. I kept on prodding along with her that even though we didn't have a house and we were going through moving and storage and all those things and living in a hotel, that you know, we both had been in A-teams for enough of a time now that we had an idea of how groups worked, and that you guys from stage kept on talking about how all you had to do was have a place to be able to host and you could be a host. Didn't have to be a biblical scholar. We're certainly not, but I knew we could kind of, you know, moderate or facilitate a group. And so I work at a law firm here in Hyde Park, and I just went to one of the partners and said, hey, you know, we don't have a house. We really want to host this Bible study for our church. It's important. And, you know, there's nothing going on here at 7 or 7:30 on a weeknight. Can we just have one of the conference rooms? He said, sure, go ahead and do it. So we have had, that's been our place for the last 6 weeks with about 10 or 12 people in our life group.
That's awesome. So you've been in this journey now in the life, but your journey, what God's been doing in your life, obviously goes way before that. Could you identify with any of the, you know, discipline, pruning, or fruit bearing?
Yeah, pretty much all of them. First and foremost, identified with just being down in the dirt. I mean, a couple of years ago, me personally and frankly, our marriage was really, I mean, it was in the dirt. And I think we realized over a period of time that we had kind of, even since the very beginning of our marriage, we'd been kind of doing it largely independent of each other and definitely independent of God. Mm-hmm. And things started to just break down. And we realized that's really why. And that's where we found ourselves. And I think...
And that they're separated.
Yeah.
In isolated branches.
Yes. And, but over the course of a couple of things that,
pretty significant, like down in the dirt type of things.
Can you give us like one example?
Sure, I'll give you one. And what really changed me, and I tell Allie, it's kind of like, that goes back to one of the first life series on the born again thing. Like my kind of born again moment was 2.5 years ago or so, losing my dad. It was the thing that I was kind of doing life on my own, and I hadn't been associated with the church since college, and I hadn't really thought much about God, and just some of the last talks I had with my dad, just seeing him kind of go through a long illness at a very young age for that illness, it's just, it's kind of what you talked about earlier tonight. Like, you only had 1 year left to live, you would live a lot differently. And I watched my dad only have the last, you know, few months of his life to live, and it took a while to change me. I mean, I was mad at God for quite a while, but eventually what I realized was, the reason I was so, being so mad at him made me realize that I was dependent upon him. He was there. And I really blamed on him for a while, and then out of that, I came to the crossroads, started going to church again, and kind of found community with six guys in my A team that are just great and have built from there.
What else has God done with you in your journey to bring you life?
I think probably the first thing that we realized, I don't know why it was the first thing. Now looking back, I think I realized why this had to come first, but the first thing that Bill and I really went through together, probably for the first time since we'd ever known each other, mm-hmm. gone through really spiritually together, was our Crazy Campaign commitment.
And for those of you who don't know, Crazy Campaign was the last journey we were on and affected some of the things you just saw before. So.
And when we realized, I think, that the first thing God was asking us to do was to put our finances in order, and not only in order, but over and above give to what he was doing. And we really went through that process together. I think for the first time we had known each other. We'd been married almost 5 years at that point, and we'd known each other for 10, and I think that's the very, very first time we ever really came together with God in the middle of our relationship.
That's awesome. When we talked about people, I've been hearing from folks that had a hard time understanding, what does it mean, abundance, excess? What does it mean? And I know you've experienced that in a couple ways. Maybe share just the first way, with relationally, you felt some relational excess coming out of the life group, coming
yeah.
out of pruning your schedule to do that.
Well, we went home from the life group the very first night. We were in kind of a crappy hotel at the time. I probably wasn't
you
supposed to say that.
No, that's all right. Just don't say the name.
And we went back to the hotel, and we're having dinner, and I said to Bill, I said, tonight, for the very first time in our marriage, I saw something in you that I've never seen before. I saw some kind of leadership, some kind of like spiritual growth that was coming out of Bill as he talked to the group and as he led us through some of the questions in the group, that I realized was probably there all along, and just I had never made room for, or our marriage had just never been the right environment to come out. And it was just, it was awesome to see that. It was really awesome
to see
that.
That probably brought you closer, an excess of abundance there.
Yeah.
Definitely. Probably a lot of fun things probably brought you closer.
Well, we also just moved into
the house.
Just moved into our new house last week. Never thought we would be able to move into this neighborhood or this house, because we after making our commitment, we kind of felt God leading us away from where we were before.
The past 7 weeks is, for both of us, has been growing together and the life group, but then also, you know, I mentioned to you earlier that we never were really dependent upon each other from the very beginning in our marriage, because of just having good jobs and having kind of our own identity and having no place to live. I mean, for the last 7 weeks, and just literally packing up my Jeep every weekend and going to Columbus or going to a friend's house or to another hotel or whatever, we had to depend upon each other. And so that's been big.
So you felt then this, I hear you saying the abundance or the excess or the life, you felt it relationally, marital, relationally with other people, yeah. maritally, even in a strange way, we try to downplay it and oftentimes, but really financially, you've sensed it just all across the board.
Yeah.
So how's this going to affect your life from here on then?
Well, I mean, the best thing, going back through my journey from my dad and through the Crazy Campaign, time here at Crossroads, my A team, and to these life groups, is what I realize is I can't, what I did for a lot of years was just kind of trudge through things on my own. I'm very, very fiercely independent, and I just thought I could do whatever it was myself. And not only am I dependent upon God, but more than that, just upon guys in my A team, upon Allie, and just upon community. And that the life group, for some people in my group, I think it's the first time they've been in a group, and you can sense that there's people really have a need for community or kind of reaching out. And just, you know, I just feel like, I told you yesterday, I called Brian up yesterday morning, and I said, I'm not going to do this, Brian. I don't want to go on stage and talk in front of people. And I said, you know, that's not me. I'm not spiritually I don't want to share with other people. I'm just spiritually personal, but that's not really the way to do it.
Yeah. Huge courage coming up here and doing this. Huge. Let's thank them for doing this. Band's going to do a song to lead us through a little bit of reflection before Molly shares some community life. But let's pray for Bill and Allie and everyone in this life journey right now before we do that. God, a great thing was happening in Bill and Allie's life, and I know their two stories could be reproduced hundreds, 3,000 times those two stories can be reproduced across our community. There's all what you've uniquely done inside of us. Help us to honor your friendship and stay close with you. Molly, let's know a little bit of where we go from here. And while we're doing that, we're going to take up an offering. And so if that's something that would give you life, go participate. If not, just let it pass right on by. Oh, and you're off.
Maybe.
You are on. There you go.
There we go. Well, I know just for me in this last week, some of the people in my life group were kind of like, what do we do next? Where do we go from here? And when you came in tonight, you got something that says after the life. And it's just some ideas of some things that you might want to consider. Because so many people have been saying, I just know that I need friendships and I need people with me on this journey. So we've given you a couple of ideas there. One is, you may want to continue as a group, or you may not. It's okay if you don't. But there may be people who want to
totally
get together
fine,
and do that.
Because we told people on the front end, this is a 7-week commitment.
Yep.
And if people in your group don't want to do it, that was never the expectation in the beginning. But if people or no one wants to, hey, that was not the expectation. So
right.
Don't give anybody a guilt trip for that.
Yeah. But if there are people that do want to continue on, we have resources that we can point you to kind of give you ideas of things you might want to do together. And then also, we have a great list of community groups, a bunch of community groups that are starting in May. So you can zero in on a particular topic. Maybe you're new to this journey of following Christ and being a friend of Jesus. And so the basics might be something for you. The other thing would be, if you're wanting to be a part of God's work and you want to do something in the midst of this community responding to your friendship with Jesus, you can get involved serving. And there are plenty of places we really need people to serve. So we just invite you, if you're a person that has this burning thing inside of, I want to do something, I want to keep this going, those are some ideas for you. Another thing just to point out is we have open house coming up next week, which Brian talked a little today about some of the things we've been doing. Just responding to God in the midst of our crazy campaign, that journey we took last year. There's just a lot to kind of take in and soak in with what God's doing in this place. And open house is a great place to start. That's where you start and you can understand everything about crazy campaign and what goes on in here, or around here, I should say. The other thing I want to tell you is next week, he was stepping on the grapes earlier tonight. I don't know if anybody saw that.
Yep.
It was quite a show. Close. Were those washed? I just realized.
I don't know.
That.
Okay. It's been a while since I washed my hands, for sure.
But the last thing we want to tell you about is
that'll give you life.
Yeah, that's solid life. The last thing is next week is going to be a very special service. And by very special, we mean you do not want to miss it. This is going to be something that will mark just our church and the future of what we're doing here for quite some time. So please, you will be very disappointed.
And we can't tell you more.
Yeah, it's a surprise. So, yes. But just don't miss it. Be here because it's going to be great. So.
All right, Stephen, before we see if you can catch any better than Molly.
Now his guitar is out of tune.
Yeah. Hey, we've got a song that we're gonna do that. Tell us the whole deal. Lead us here.
Well, you know, the first thing that you said when you first got up was, "What a weird thing it is for God to approach people and initiate a relationship of friendship. That is bizarre. There's something crazy about that, and that He would come to us and trust us." with friendship with him is, I mean, what a degree of love and trust he expresses when he says that. So we're going to sing a song that just celebrates the fact that he's so loving like that. Just says how loving you are. So would you all stand up? We're going to do this song.
What I'll conclude the journey with is this. Jesus did many other things as well. And if every one of them were written down, I suppose that the whole world would not have enough room for the books that would be written. This is such a snippet, just a 30,000 feet, treetop level of the kind of life that Jesus lived. And stuff we talked about last 7 weeks, it's just a treetop, barely touching on the kind of life that waits for you as you enjoy the relationship, friendship with Jesus he is dying to have with you. God, thank you for this journey and for every life that made it possible. Most importantly, thank you for your life. Amen. All right, have a great week and take that reverb on my mic. We'll see you. Bye.